This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. Time to get your variety coins graded. The new PCGS quarterly grading special is in effect, and collectors can receive half off variety attribution on up to 5 coins. Visit pcgs.com/ccspecial to find out more. Bruce Moreland is one of the principals behind Legend Numismatics. He is also a mega collector, who over the course of the past several years has assembled one of the finest known sets of early dollars, including the record-shattering $10 million 1794 Cardinal dollar. He just added a big coin to his set and joins me in this week's episode of the Coin Week podcast to talk about it. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for joining me on the Coin Week podcast.
It's great to be here talking to you.
So, rumor has it that you picked up a fairly important coin a couple weeks ago at the fifth session of the Pogue sale. Care to elaborate about it?
I did. I fulfilled a lifelong dream and acquired the Dexter specimen of the Class 1 1804 dollar, also known as an original striking, which is a bit of a misnomer, but nonetheless, it is an official striking of the mint and a coin that really is the king of American coins.
It seems to me that you got that coin for what amounts to a pretty good deal, considering reports that I've heard that the family was offered more money for the coin before the collection in total was offered for sale.
I'm quite pleased and literally shocked at the price level that I was able to acquire it at. I have other financial things going on, and so was initially not a aggressive bidder on the coin. But after seeing what it sold for and calculating what it could possibly be acquired at, I put an offer in on and was fortunate that it was accepted.
So is this coin going to be a long-term hold for you, or do you intend to listen to offers for it?
It's intended to be a cornerstone of my collection, along, of course, with the specimen striking of the $1794 dollar. It's not necessary for the coins that I collect. In general, I don't collect proof coins, but it certainly is complementary to my collection. Most of the great long-term silver dollar collections have included an 1804, and I've always wanted one. It was the last rarity that I haven't owned, and now I have.
The Dexter dollar was the second 1804 dollar in the impressive Pogue collection. Were you ever a player or consider taking a shot at the finest known example, the child specimen that was offered at the Pogue 4 session?
I did not bid on the coin. The reports that I got were that the surface of the coin was not of proof 68 quality, which wasn't of great concern to me because literally all of the 1804 dollars are in holders with an insert higher than the actual grade of the coin, including the coin that I just purchased. I grade that coin as a 64. It's in a 65 holder. So in general, if you look at an 1804 dollar and assume that it's two grades overgraded, you're probably pretty spot on, which means the coin I acquired is better than par for the course. So I'm happy with that. But no, I was not a bidder on the child's coin. I do believe that people were disappointed that it wasn't allowed to sell, that it would have made headlines for what it would have sold for if they had allowed it to sell. And I honestly believe that not allowing the first one to sell created the circumstances that ended up with me owning the second one. So in that instance, I'm grateful.
Let's talk about the Pogue collection. The sale's all over now, and I realized that while the sale was going on, that competitors might be reluctant to talk up coins or the collections since they're being offered by somebody else. But now that it's over, maybe we can talk openly about it. How significant, in your opinion, was the Poe collection for the rare coin market when it was being put together? And what does its sale mean for that next generation of mega collector?
Well, I can tell you that that is a collection that I looked up to throughout my collecting career and strove to beat. When you have to compete against and see another collection that is the standard, it forces you to be more aggressive. It forces you to be more focused. I chose to focus on the early dollars and seeded dollars, and when I was up against Pogue, it was very difficult to win. And essentially, you had to steel yourself and say, I'm going to acquire this coin no matter what, because it's a coin that must be in my collection rather than his. And it got pretty expensive to do that. But I said all along that that was the only collection that I would pay to go view, and I meant it. I one time saw his quarter collection displayed at an ANA at a dealer's table, and my jaw literally dropped open. It was, I think the quarters were the best part of his set. They were amazing. And so he set the bar, and the rest of us have had to live up to that bar and try and exceed that bar. And I believe I have done that in the dollars, and I believe that there are other people that will do that in individual sets, but I don't think anybody's going to do it across the spectrum of metals and series like they did.
So with Legend Numismatics, a large part of your company's core brand proposition is high eye appeal, high value for the grade coins for collectors with discriminating taste. When you look at the Poe collection, you see not only how much money it costs to assemble that set, to outbid other competitors at auction and acquire these coins, but you also see how long it took to achieve that goal. For a company that's trying to put together world-class collections together at the same time for a number of high-end clients, how difficult is it to source these high-end coins? And if money was no object, how difficult would it be to try to top what Brent and Mac Pogue did?
If money was no object, it could be done eventually. The question is, how long would it take you to do it? For the most part, he had his choice of coins for 20, 25 years. Very few people outbid him from when he started, and his goal was high grade, high quality coins. Not all of them were high end for the grade on the holder, but all of them were high end for in the context of the series of the coin, the beautiful coins. It can be done. For instance, if you were to examine his dollars on a coin by coin basis versus my dollars on a coin by coin basis, you would find that quality for the grade and eye appeal that mine is a slight notch higher, and money in general was no object for me in putting that set together. So it can be done. It's just how long would it take you to do it? And if you're doing it in one series, can you do it in all series? Right. I know an early half-dollar collector that is creating a half-dollar set that is finer than Pogue's in grade and quality for the grade. And I'm sure there are other people out there doing it for quarters and for dimes and for half-dimes and for the gold. But nobody that I know of is trying to do it for all of the series across all of the metals like the Pogues did. That was just an outstanding achievement.
I know that I've personally watched you carefully scrutinize coins that you were considering adding to your collection. And these are coins that, you know, Legend may have acquired, but you took them and meticulously compared these coins against the coins you already owned. Regardless of who holdered it or what the grade was, if it was like a 1 point up or 1 point down, you're still looking and doing the yeoman's work to determine which coins were appropriate for your set building goals?
Oh, absolutely. My goal is to have not only the finest grade that I can acquire, but the finest coin for that grade that I can acquire. In my experience and a premise of my collecting is that the plastic has a value, and that value is both positive and negative. If the coin is conservatively graded, then you're going to get more of a bargain and pay less for the quality of the coin than if the coin is a bit loosely graded, then the plastic has a positive value and you're paying for the grade on the holder more than the quality of the coin.
Right. And it does seem to me that a coin grader does just as much a disservice to the collector by undergrading a coin as he or she might do by overgrading it.
Yes, I agree. If a coin is blatantly undergraded, then the plastic has a negative value. It holds the value of the coin down. Very few collectors will pay the next grade up for an undergraded coin. I will if that's what it takes to acquire it. I believe in my grading ability, and I've won grading contests for collectors throughout my career, and I have great advisors. And if we need to, we will. If it's the finest and it belongs in my set, then we'll pay for the actual quality of the coin, irrespective of the grade on the holder. But in general, if a grading service blatantly undergrades a coin, then the plastic has a negative impact on the value of the coin, and the collector is not going to realize the price that he should have for it.
At the ANA last year, you told me that you'd even consider downgrading a coin for your set if you found it to be overgraded. Do you still feel that way, and have you actually ever really done that?
Yes, absolutely. I've done that at least three or four times. excuse me. Certainly in my Seated Liberty dollar set, I can think of three examples where I didn't believe in the grade of the coin when I acquired it, but I acquired it at a price that was commensurate to the quality of the coin, and then I just put it in the holder that I agreed with. For example, the 1859S dollar, I acquired it as a NGC MS65. It was not. I did not agree with that grade, and we downgraded it to a MS64 plus at PCGS, which I can wholeheartedly stand behind that grade. I think that whatever value I lost there by downgrading the coin, that I gained by maintaining quality for the grade in my set as a whole.
Hubert and I wrote a piece, which is probably our final word on the Pogue sales, a few weeks ago, and it talked about the fact that the Pogues didn't necessarily go out and try to capture any attention in the media. Now, obviously, if you attended any coin auction or convention and they were there because there were coins that they wanted, you knew it. You knew that they were either there in person or had representation, or that their money was there based on what the prices of the coins were. But they didn't try to steal the limelight when they bought a big coin. And this runs counter to one of the things that I've for a long time believed, that when trying to expand the reach of the numismatic market to people outside of the hobby, that it's important to demonstrate that coins are interesting things that are collected by interesting people. You know, I should trademark that phrase. So I feel that it does a hobby a great service if you have loud and outgoing collectors assembling sets that capture the public's attention, like Eliasberg, so that when the sets are sold, there's more interest in the event and a roadmap to other collectors of how to build such a collection or build even better collections. Do you agree with that bit of analysis?
I think so, and that's why I've been willing to be more open with who I am and what I'm acquiring and sharing my collections on display and on the set registry. I think of myself as an ambassador for numismatics. I own part of Legend Numismatics, and so financially, it's to my benefit to have people be interested in coin collection, but also it's my passion, and I love to communicate my passion. The last thing that I want to do is have these coins sit in the vault where not even I can enjoy them. It gave me great pleasure to see the display that TCGS did for my early dollar set at Long Beach. I was blown away. They did a fantastic job. And I hope that everybody that got a chance to see it were also blown away by the quality of the coins and the passion that I was able to communicate in the brochure, in the interview that was on display there also at the same time. And if they can come away with anything out of that, it's that if you really enjoy your hobby and really get that passion for it, it can be a catching thing. It can be contagious. So I'm hoping that a few people caught the bug.
Speaking of catching the bug, what was the coin that really got you into collecting?
It's a story I like to tell. When I was six, my great-grandmother knew that I was somewhat interested in coins, but I was dabbling a little bit because my adopted grandfather was a coin collector, and I was visiting her, and she pulled three old coins out of her teapot that she'd saved for many, many years, and one was a half dime, one was a 3-cent nickel, and one was a trade dollar. And I never forgot those coins, and after I paid my business off and said, okay, I'm going to get back into coin collecting, the first coin I bought and the first series that I set about doing were trade dollars in memory of that coin that she'd given to me out of the teapot. So I would say that inspired me to do dollars, and my adopted grandfather always said, buy the best coin that you can afford. And that meshed exactly with Legend's philosophy of buy the best coin for the grade that you can afford. So everything has come together and allowed me to create these great sets that I'm very proud of. And I'm just been a very fortunate person in numismatics and in life.
And how would your adopted grandfather feel if he were around to see you acquire a coin as important and famous as the Dexter Specimen 1804 dollar?
Well, I know that he was pleased as punch when I showed him the 1913 Liberty Head nickel that I had acquired before. And before he passed on, he did get to see that coin. And he couldn't believe it. He couldn't put it down. And I know for a fact that his reaction would be the same or more for the 1804 dollar. He would, he'd be very proud of me, I know. And it's a good, fond memory.
Well, Bruce, thanks for joining me to talk about your new acquisition. And thank you for being so open about your collecting interests and sharing this great hobby with other collectors. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. It is. It's the hobby of kings, and you don't have to be a king to enjoy it. So collect what you love, and even if you aren't financially rewarded, you'll be rewarded in other ways.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. Remember, you can download all 60-plus episodes of the Coin Week podcast for free from the iTunes Store. While you're there, please leave us a review. We like to hear your feedback because it makes the show better. For Coin Week, I'm Editor Charles Morgan. Until next time, happy collecting.